This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, Claret, and welcome to another episode of the Known and Never podcast. This is the preview show again. We are looking ahead to the Claret's next Premier League fixture, which is an away tie at Aston Villa this coming weekend. We're looking back on that disappointing Boxing Day defeat against Liverpool. Different kickoff times, different decisions, but the same result, unfortunately, for Claret, leaving us with yet another defeat in this season's struggling Premier League campaign. We've got Tom on this week, who's also going to look back a little bit further to that Fulham game, and we talk about the Claret's making a couple of steps forward and a couple of steps back. It's a little bit of a roller coaster of a season. And then Statman Dave is going to be joining us with all of the stats, facts, and information that you need ahead of the Claret's next game. So, buckle up. Let's go. Tom, Dave, how are you both? Welcome back.
Thanks, Nalia. Well fed after Christmas. Looking forward to dissecting those performances.
Yeah, definitely. We're all just a little bit. We're in that post-Christmas. What day is it? I've had chocolate for breakfast again. But how are you, Dave? Are you lethargic as well?
Yeah, they say that the camera puts pounds on you, but I think Christmas yeah.
Let's go with that. Yes, it's not us, listeners. It's the turkey and, well, not for me, but it's the cheese and the wine and the chocolate. Let's go there. Tom, we're going to kick off straight away, actually, by looking back at that Liverpool fixture. The Claret were at home on Boxing Day against Liverpool. One of those that's been, you know, put in that bonus game bracket that we get. Liverpool, of course, doing very well this season, top of the league, looking for a title challenge. We didn't necessarily expect to get any points from that, but with some better performances recently and some a win under our belt, particularly away at Fulham, we were all feeling a little bit optimistic that the Clarets would at least be challenging again in this game and would make a performance out of it. Wasn't the case in the second half. In the first half. We had to wait until the last 35 minutes before the Clarets got going. But I guess I'm going to hand over to you. What did you make of that Liverpool game and, I guess, the performance before we go any further?
Yeah, I think you can take what you want from it, really. There's a lot of people who are perhaps slightly more on the glass half full side of things than I am. They were saying, you know, it was a really good performance. There was a battle. There was, you know, we haven't had a lot of fight in some of these games this season, so there was definitely more of that. As you say, in that last 35 minutes, we caused them problems, obviously without actually getting a shot on target, but we did have some decent chances to score. So that was encouraging. We stayed in the game for a long period as well. I think if you're on the glass half empty side, you could say, well, for an hour we weren't really competing. I think the performance was just as bad as Spurs or Chelsea. I think the difference was
and Everton,
either Liverpool not taking the chances or having a couple of goals disallowed that were pretty fortuitous, really. I mean, I think, you know, we all remember the VAR calls that go against us, but there's two there, really, that certainly one of them, the disallowed goal for the foul on Taylor, I have no idea.
No idea. Yeah, none at all. And actually, I thought the offside was a weird one as well, to be honest. I don't.
Yeah, that
looked a shocker.
It was borderline, wasn't it? But we're not good enough to take advantage, unfortunately, of these kind of things when they happen to us. And as you said at the start, you know, Liverpool are a good side, and you'd be daft really to expect us to beat them. And the last 35 minutes did give us a bit of hope that if we can perform in that manner against weaker teams, that we'll get some points. And you know, we could hardly get less points at home, could we, in the second half of the season. So hopefully when the fixtures get a bit easier at the turf and we improve, that level of performance will see us at least hopefully make some inroads into breaking Derby County's record at the very least.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah, I'm not entirely confident that's going to happen yet. But I think for me, I've resigned myself to the fact that if we do survive this season, we will finish 17th and it will be very, very close. It might even go down to some weird goal difference, or there'll be a 1 point. Actually, I don't think if it goes to goal difference, it'll probably go down, but I think it's going to be a very, very close survival if we get there. So I'm trying to spend this season now trying to salvage what I can in terms of positivities and plans going forward in the future. And one of the things that we have been critical of this season, as you rightly say, is that fight and that desire. I definitely saw that in that last 35 minutes, Tom. I saw a determination, and I think in the first half, for me, we looked resigned to defeat. I didn't see any players coming out in that first half who didn't just expect to get beat. And it was, there wasn't the effort there. There wasn't an intensity. There wasn't a drive. It was just, and particularly for the first goal. And then just, it was a really weak and lackluster performance for me. So I want to see this side starting to fight, because fans want that. They want to see their players not being walked over, and they want to at least make their teams that like earn the 3 points against them. So I guess from what you saw in that last 35 minutes, what do the Climates need to take from that to expand that into the whole of the game and to get more than just having one half of football in them, which you were there, you saw at Fulham, terrible first half, brilliant second half. What elements are we picking out of that?
Yeah, I think belief is probably quite a big thing. You know, it's pretty understandable that a team who loses as often as we do would lack that. I think at Fulham, as you say, the first half we were poor, we weren't really in the game, and we sort of scored a wonder goal out of nowhere, and then we suddenly had something to hang on to, and I think that's where the fight and the battle came from. And I think similar in that Liverpool game, you know, it was the second disallowed goal, and I think then the crowd started to feel like maybe this is our day. You know, we've had some luck at last. Yeah. There was the big tackle from Charlie Taylor on Mo Salah a couple of months later.
And, oh my God! By the way,
it felt like the Dyche days again, didn't it, with that tackle? And then I think then the crowd is up for it, and then the players feed off that. Yeah. A bit of belief comes back in. So it's just harnessing that, and it's difficult to do because, you know, as you say, a lot of games we're playing, we are second best. We aren't a great team this season, but we have shown on occasions we can do it. You know. I know Sheffield United aren't a brilliant side, but we absolutely pasted them. You know, we dispatched them pretty handily. Fulham is going to be the blueprint. I think it was quite a Dyche-ian performance in a way. It was nicking goals and just solid control in the game thereafter. We haven't seen that very often where we've been in control of games. We know that every time we've gone behind this season, we've gone on to lose the game. So that's something, again, that tells you that I think there's probably a mental component to it as much as anything else. So, yeah, that's, I think, scoring goals at good times will be helpful, you know, trying to get in front in a few more games. Yeah. And you know, belief, whether or not we believe we're going to survive necessarily. But if we have the belief just to start picking up a few more points, get a bit more confidence, maybe go on some... we need to put a big run together at some point, though, in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
To give ourselves any chance.
We need to start by back-to-back wins. That would be a really... Yeah. Like a really, that would stop that roller coaster of step forward, step back all the time. It's like we've never had momentum this season, ever. Mm-hmm. The only momentum we've had is a really long losing streak, which has such a difficult and such a negative impact on the squad and the fans. And I think just picking up on what you said there, Tom, which I just want to expand on, this isn't a criticism of the board. I sit on the fan advisory board with George and Charlotte, and we were very excited about the board's plans to try and increase fan experience at Turf Moor. I understand where they're coming from, and I bought into the enthusiasm there. The flag policy, I don't agree with it. I think that was just something that just didn't quite work. And Tuesday, the Boxing Day game for me showed exactly how you do increase that crowd experience and that noise at Turf Moor. You can still do that when you're on the losing side, as we saw. It's that fight. That's what fans react to. It was that 35 minutes when we were suddenly trying, and we had the brilliant Order Bird running down the wing, and Charlie Taylor feeding off him, and Charlie actually putting in those tackles and running down the wing and really going third, fourth, fifth gear, sweat coming off him, is absolutely knackered trying to just keep us in the game. That's what we react to. That is when you get us on our feet shouting and screaming for these players and getting behind them. That's what we've been missing, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. So many games where, I mean, the obvious examples are Spurs and Chelsea. We concede one goal, and then it's two, then it's three, then it's four. And the heads drop very quickly. As I say, coming back to that stat about not having come from behind all season, I mean, not even to get a draw, you know. And if we were a team that could just hang in a bit more like we did at Brighton, nick a point, you know, if we'd have drawn that game against West Ham, say, even, or we'd have managed the late equaliser and drawn at home to Palace, you still felt disappointed at the points dropped, but you would have got something, you know.
Yep.
Man United at home, we shouldn't be losing that game. That should have been a minimum. No. I think when you said before about not having put back-to-back wins together, I think I'm right in saying we haven't actually put back-to-back results of any any kind together this season. I think every time we've got a point or a win, we've lost the next game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's right, Dave. We shall deflect to the expert. If only we had a ready-made stat man on the show. Ta-da! Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, so things like that tell you a lot, don't they? I think we're starting to see that now. I think there's been a lot of talk about all companies learning and companies. And one of the things that I really had a downer on him about was that he was saying, you know, we're going to stick to this no matter what. We're going to play our way. And you think, well, it's rubbish and it doesn't get you any points.
It's not working. Think, you know,
he's kind of admitting more and more we're kind of moving to a bit more of a, you know, muck in, keep it tight, be a bit more defensive. I think we're much more willing to play the ball long when we need to.
Yeah, we saw it a couple of times. The absolutely brilliant Trafford, who has really turned a corner over the last few. It's like so many fans have been really critical of him this season. And I understand why. I've very much been in that camp. I never understood. I thought Muric was very harshly done by. I thought it was his shirt to lose, or at least to try and keep hold of. And Trafford just wasn't ready in the early stages. And it's very frustrating to watch. This past few games, I've seen confidence in him. And I thought, again, he had an absolutely brilliant game against Liverpool. He perhaps didn't face as many chances as we thought he maybe did. I think Liverpool, it wasn't a relentless peppering of his goal anyway. I think it was, you know, he was able to have breathing space between them. And I think he's really helped. And we saw that where he was just stopped for a second. And it's slightly hypocritical of us as fans when we analyse this, because one of the things we said about Trafford at the beginning of the season was he's holding up, his delay in play. He doesn't distribute it as well as Muric does. So we know it's stopped tight, it's inviting pressure. We didn't realise that actually we needed more of that, not less, because we needed just to stop for a minute and not play the ball out too quickly and lose possession and invite that pressure back on ourselves. And that was something that we as fans didn't realise, I think, at the beginning of the season. But picking up on what you said then, Tom, one of the other comments that the company has said this week is that he's excited by the group of young players that we have and he would pay to watch them. And I think when it comes to our forward players like Kolesar and Odegaard, Amdouni, I'm a huge fan of. I think he's a great player. I completely agree with that. And I do enjoy it. And we saw those little pockets against Liverpool of really exciting attacking brilliance. But I want to stop company and say, that's all good and well, but what about the defence, which still is letting us down, Tom?
And to be honest as well, as exciting as it is to watch Odegaard, Trezor, Kolesar, how often do you get an end product? You know, how often in a game will Amdouni or Trezor beat three or four men and then
put it in the back of the net?
Lamp it in the stand. Yeah, you saw. And, you know, no shots on target on Tuesday. There was some great build-up play. I thought Trezor looked really good, especially in the first half, and he was on the ball, beat three or four. But then, I mean, I couldn't tell you if he's a good finisher or not, because I don't think I've ever actually seen him have a shot.
No, I think you're right.
His crossing looks better than Brownhill's, but whether that's damning with faint praise.
I love Brownhill so much, but, oh, Brownie, your crosses, man. your corners and your crosses. I love him. I genuinely love him. But just step away from that element of the game, Brownie. Carry on, sorry.
So I think as much as they are good players, and you can see, like with Trafford, like you can see in a couple of years, he will be a really good player, I think. And I think he did some great work with Norwich. He got so much better with crosses and things like that at the second half of last season. And if they develop Trafford like they did that, then he'll be a good player in a couple of years. And it's the same with, like, you can see Trezor and Dooney, Colioche. These are going to be good players, I think. They've got ability, but not getting enough out of them at the minute. And it's as much as the defence has been really bad this season, like, we don't score enough goals, you know. We haven't got a lot up front, especially without Foster. And obviously Foster's still just getting back to fitness. In the last
looked
two
good
games,
though on Saturday, Tuesday, sorry. He looked good, did Foster,
yeah,
I think.
Getting back there, second half of that game, he looked better, yeah, for sure. But I think the last two games, we've had two shots on target. They've both gone in. You know, the goal from Oliver at Fulham was brilliant. Burge took his goal well. And then, you know, you can say after that, you don't need any more shots on target because you're 2-0 up and you're controlling the game. It's not acceptable, I don't think, to have zero shots on target in a home game. It doesn't matter who you're playing. And especially in a position where you're needing wins, you're needing points at home. So as much as you say the defence has been bad, and as sometimes it is fun to watch us, you know, sometimes we are exciting when we attack, but how often does that excitement actually translate into forcing the keeper to make a good save, scoring a goal, winning a penalty, anything like that? You know, the end product isn't there for a lot of these players, and we have too many players who are so similar in that regard as well. So, I think it's all very well for company to say you'd like to pay to watch these players. As someone who does pay to watch them every week,
we do.
The reality of how exciting it is perhaps is not quite there just yet. Maybe in a couple of years' time, but not quite there just yet.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, good stuff. Let's move on to the next game then, please. Now, Dave, there is a little bit of an error in my script. I opened a script in readiness to start recording today and there's a section missing and I'm not happy about it. And I'm not going to be the one to break this news to our listeners. You can, since this is your initiative.
Well, the section's there, if you look carefully.
And what does it say? Tell our listeners what you've done.
It says, we've decided to retire the quiz for the second half of this season to make room for a much-loved returning feature later in the show. More about that a little bit later.
And listeners, when we say we, this was the royal we. I had no input in this at all. I apparently have absolutely no control over my own show, which is great. And I know that the previous show is Dave's baby and he puts in a hell of a lot of work to prepare it, and I'm very grateful to it. But he just he went rogue again and just decided to bin the quiz. So for all of our listeners who love the quiz, I'm going to have words off air and I'll see what I can do for the rest of the season. So, Dave, with that in mind, disappointing our listeners once again, we're going to go straight on to then previewing the next show. It is Saturday the 30th of December. It's a 3 p.m. kickoff away Aston Villa, not shown anywhere live in the UK. Kick us off, please, with your match results summary.
Okay, our league rivalry goes back over 135 years, as both clubs were founder members of the English Football League in 1888. The current campaign is the 50th that both clubs have spent together in the top flight, and there have been just three in the second tier. Our 52 previous away league meetings against Aston Villa, starting off at Wellington Road and then at Villa Park since 1899, have produced a measly 8 Burnley wins, plus 15 draws and 29 defeats. Burnley are averaging just over a goal a game with 53, but have conceded a whopping 117 times.
Gosh, that's not a great start to the previous show, is it? I wonder if we can maybe do something about that on Saturday. Who knows? Okay, new feature, one to remember and one to forget. It's the second half of this season, and we're going to continue the one to remember, one to forget feature for the reverse set of features this time. As always, we'll remind you of two past matches which were memorable for very contrasting reasons. Dave, kick us off with match one, please.
Although Burnley suffered a 10-0 away defeat at Villa Park, that was in the opening match of the 1925-26 season, we've decided to revisit a more recent debacle as our one to forget this time. The match in question was from February 2010. Brian Laws's Clarets faced Martin O'Neill's Aston Villa in a Sunday afternoon kickoff in front of the Sky Sports cameras, and 1,191 Burnley fans made the trip to the Midlands. Chelsea loanee Jack Cork was in the Burnley starting 11. Although Stephen Fletcher gave us the lead in the 10th minute, it was 1-1 at the break, with Ashley Young scoring a 32nd minute equaliser for the home side. That was followed by four goals in 13 minutes, as Stuart Downing twice, Emil Heskey and Gabby Abonlahor put Villa into an unassailable 5-1 lead. Burnley did pull back a late consolation through substitute Martin Patterson. I was in stoppage time, but the writing had been on the wall as soon as the second half goal, Avalanche, had taken place. For those of you who like to hear the headlines, I know some of you do, the Burnley Express went with Calamity Clarets, it's another dismal road trip.
Oh dear, this is like, that could be this season. Nice memories of that game, Tom? I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I was at that one. I remember very excited when we went 1-0 up, Stephen Fletcher scored, and I was wishing I was somewhere else by full time.
Yeah, I bet you were.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, let's get on to better ones then. Match two, Dave, which is our one to remember, please.
Yeah, since that 5-2 defeat in 2010, Burnley are actually unbeaten in four Premier League away matches at Aston Villa, with one win followed by a run of three draws. Although in between times, we did lose at Villa Park in the League Cup in October 2010. But for our one to remember, we're turning the clock back over 50 years to the 1972-73 season and a match from early January 1973. Match highlights were shown on ITV by ATV, who chose the Division 2 clash between Vic Crowe's Villa side and Jimmy Adamson's high-flying Clarets. Leaders Burnley were looking to build momentum with an impressive performance and result at Villa Park, and first-half goals from Keith Newton and Jeff Nulty provided a 2-0 lead at the break. Billy Ingham scored his first goal for the club 3 minutes into the second half to help us to a 3-0 away win. That victory kept Burnley at the top of the second division table, with Villa in fifth place, and the Burnley Express headline asked the question, who can stop Burnley now? The answer was no one, as the season ended well with promotion as title winners, and a return to the top flight at the second attempt. With only two promotion places and no playoffs, Villa finished in third place that season and had to spend another two seasons in Division 2 before they were able to secure another promotion.
Good stuff. That's a better one to end on. We've no opposition view this week, I'm afraid. We are still struggling to get hold of some of our opposition fans in a very, very packed seasonal fixture. So I'm going to hand straight back over to you, Dave, please, for the referee details.
OK, 41-year-old Stuart Atwell of Nuneaton will be in charge for Burnley's visit to Villa Park this weekend. He first refereed us back in 2009. That was for a 3-3 draw against Manchester City at the City of Manchester Stadium. Burnley have five wins, eight draws and four defeats in 17 previous matches, including a 4-1 home defeat to Chelsea as recently as October. He saw fit to send off Nottingham Forest's Henry Lansbury and Newcastle United's Andy Carroll, but these were his only two dismissals in those previous 17 matches. Peter Banks is in charge of the goal prevention technology this Saturday, as he's been appointed as the video assistant referee for this fixture.
Very good. Love it. Tom. Get me Dave's and me Tom's mixed up. Tom, have we got any chance against Villa? Villa have been a surprise package this season. They've got a fantastic coach. They've cultivated a really great squad and have come out flying and have made themselves genuine contenders for a headline finish this season. Absolutely pasted us at Turf. We didn't really stand a chance. Can we expect to get anything from this game? And what is the minimum that you want to see?
I think it's a good time to play them. Obviously, the winning run at home came to an end last week. They dropped points home to Sheffield United. So you think if they can go there and get something, there's no reason we can't. And then obviously what happened at Old Trafford on Tuesday. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative, really. You never know if like they'll be on the floor a bit after the way they lost that game, or yeah. It's kind of we're going to get the backlash from it. But they're a really good side this year, Villa, and you
still
did have
third.
To expect. Yeah, they've had a great season. So I'm not expecting a lot. I think what I'd like to see basically is a continuation of the sort of performance level we got in the second half against Liverpool.
Yeah.
Maybe create a little bit more, as I say, or be better with the finishing. But I think as long as there's a bit of a battle, a bit of fight, I think generally speaking, away from home, we have been a lot better than we have been at home this season. Even I know we've not played many of the big sides away, but Arsenal, you know, was quite a spirited performance, got a goal down there as well. So you'd like to think that at least we'll put in a bit of fight, give a good account of ourselves, not take too much of a hit on the goal difference. And if we can get anything points-wise, that'll be a fantastic return for the Christmas period. I think if you'd have offered me probably 3 points from Liverpool, Fulham and Villa, I'd have been probably happy with that at the start. So if we get anything in this game, it's going to be a bonus, really.
Yeah. Yeah, Fulham was the one that we were all eyeing up to, that we had a chance to. And I think if we'd have either got none or just 1 point there, it would have been a disappointing return. But like you say, if we can just get a point away at Villa, that's a fantastic result. And I would like to see us trying to get some points off some of these bigger sides. One of those fluke results that, like you say, some of our relegation rivals have already got multiples of these this season. That's how we've survived in the past. You've got to take advantage of those freak results if you're going to survive. In terms of lineups and positioning, the lineup I think on Saturday was probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest, that we could hope for right now, with the exception for me of dropping O'Shea, poor lad, and putting Ekdal in his place when he's fit. Obviously, he's injured at the moment, so there's not a lot we can do with that. But I don't think there's any more changes, is there, Dave? I think we've got all 11 available again. Do you make any changes?
He started with Trezor, didn't he, against
Liverpool?
Yes,
instead of Larson. Yeah.
Debatable. I think I might be more tempted to have Trezor as a sub and start Bryn Larson.
And who would you start instead, Dave? JBL or JBG?
I think it's much of a muchness. I think both have done reasonably well this season when they've come in, and both are able to adapt and come on as substitutes. So you've got the option with either of those two. I think maybe a preference for Jacob Bryn Larson starting and then JBG coming later on.
I don't think they're that much of a muchness. I think Larson's way better than Goodmanson. But that's just because he's younger and faster and just a slightly better quality. That's not a slight on JBG. What about you, Tom? Do you make any changes?
I think I'd be tempted to go JBG, actually. I just think he's a bit more defensive-minded. I think he works harder than the majority of the wingers we've got. You know, Amdouni's, when we don't have the ball, Amdouni might as well not be on the pitch. And it's similar for Trezor as well. So
luxury players.
Exactly. Yeah. And you struggle to carry them, I think. And I think Goodmanson is very much the opposite. He's not always, he's certainly not, as you say, the most talented of the wingers we've got on the ball, but I think he works the hardest of any of them. So
he's got that experience, right? He knows him. Like, how much have we seen, and we've relied on Charlie Taylor this season and Jay when he's been called on, just to give us that little bit of extra lack of naivety, just that been there, done there, got the scars from it, and I know what to do here.
So for me, I think I'd go for him at least for the first hour and then see how the game's going. And that's one good thing about the squad this season is we've got a lot of quality to bring off from the bench. I think it would even be quite tempted to maybe play Redmond as well. I sort of didn't bother saying it because I don't think he's ever going to give him more than 5 minutes off the bench. But again, it's that experience. And I think when he comes on, he tends to come on in that Amdouni position. And I think I think Amdouni could do his rest then, to be honest, just because he isn't scoring, he's not assisting. And like I say, if he's not doing that, he's not doing anything. He doesn't work particularly hard. So I think it'd be quite interesting to see what we were like and if we were more solid if we had Redmond, Goodmanson and Odegaard as the three behind Foster.
Yeah,
Miles.
I'd be happy with that. Yeah, that'd be a nice one to watch. Don't mind that at all. Give me a score prediction then, please, Tom.
We'll go heart overhead and say 2-1, Ben.
Oh, I love it. Dave?
1-1 draw.
Oh, for goodness sake. I'm going to say 1-0 Burnley. Let us know what you think, Clara. It's going to have your score predictions. You know how to get in touch. We want to know whether you're going head or heart. We're all going heart here, for sure. Right, Dave, before we finish off, we have the return of our famous fans feature, I believe. Go ahead. I'm not happy about this, by the way.
We for the second half of the season, we could only do it really once for half the season, otherwise we're repeating ourselves. But for the second half of the season, we are looking at famous opposition fans, and our six famous Villa fans for your consideration in no particular order are Birmingham-born cricketer Chris Wokes, age 34. He's an all-rounder, also known as the Wizard, who has represented England and Warwickshire. Next up, former Prime Minister, Call Me Dave, a.k.a. Baron Cameron of Chipping Norton. Age 57, he made a surprise return to the government in 2023 as Foreign Secretary via the House of Lords. For a long time, we would count the Prince of Wales among a list of celebrity Burnley fans, but no more. The death of Queen Elizabeth II meant that the title passed from Charles to William, and it's the latter, age 41, who's been connected with Aston Villa. Next up, Ozzy Osbourne, age 75, singer, Black Sabbath frontman, also known as the Prince of Darkness. Also, perhaps surprisingly, Tom Hanks, age 67, well-known famous US actor and filmmaker. And finally, Nigel Kennedy, age 67, classical violinist, born in Brighton, apparently, but he's a lifelong Villa fan, so he's in the six as well. What do you make of those six, and how would you score them out of 10?
I mean, it's a pretty impressive list, I'm not going to lie. Dave, ex-Prime Minister, brings it down a little bit for me. Not a fan. But other than that, it's a spectacular list. And I do love the way that you suddenly think that we're disappointed that the Prince of Wales is no longer a Burnley fan. The King is, instead. That's a pretty decent upgrade, I'm going to go with. Like, you know, Villa can keep the Prince of Wales, we'll have the King instead. I mean, that's, I know we put this to the non-Never team before we went on air, and I know, I'll save yours, Tom, because you're going to give it live on air, but I know George said it was a number seven. He was hampered by the inclusion of Cameron and William, not a fan of either of those, so he said no. Producer Matt also said Dodgy Dave brings it down, so it's an 8 from me. Tom, that's going to be the last time I'm going to call you Dave this episode. Tom, we know what your score was. You want to tell our listeners what you thought of that list?
Yeah, I went for an 8 as well. And I think I'm leaving the politics and the rest out of it. I think the fact that David Cameron couldn't actually remember which team he supported suggests to me that he's perhaps not as much of a massive Villa fan as some of the others claim to be.
Correct.
But other than that, it's a pretty good list, to be fair. And I think I know Prince William and Tom Hanks do actually go to the games and watch.
They are proper fans, so, yeah.
I'll give them that. And you can tell we're in the Premier League now with the calibre of these opposition fans, aren't they?
Do you remember we did it last season?
There's no giant anthropomorphic pies in that list, are there? So that's telling you something, I think.
I absolutely loved that last season when we had the pie. Dave's rules, like they must be alive. They can't be a chairman. They can't be what, and then we had a pie. Anyway, the regular listeners will remember that feature. Dave, it's a very solid 8 from me as well, please. I can't get past the old politics on there, I'm afraid. David Cameron brings it down for me. So otherwise it would have been a 9. Purely
well,
for Tom Hanks.
I think I was going to mention that as well, is David Cameron's actually the nephew of former Aston Villa chairman Sir William Dugdale, so that might be where the link comes. But yes, as Tom rightly pointed out, he couldn't remember which team he supported. He thought he was West Ham, didn't he? Got the colours right, and that was about it. Despite that, I think it's a strong lineup, and I'm minded to go along with you two and score an 8 for that.
There you go, 8. Aston Villa fans, our first episode of your celebrity fans this season, you go straight to the top of the league with an 8, and that's going to take some beating this season, so well done. Okay, before we leave, we're going to give you an FPL update. Our FPL expert Adam has given us a very quick piece on what's been going on over the festive fixture, so I'm going to hand straight over to you.
Good evening and welcome to the No Name Ever podcast. It's Adam here with your December FPL update. I'm going to start off with the form team at the moment, go through a bit of a league table update, and then a few hints and tips for the upcoming weeks. It's going to be eventful. With the form team at the moment, you've got Pickford in goal, we're averaging 5.5 points over the last six game weeks. Everton keeping clean sheets for fun under Dyche, and Pickford being probably performing the most consistently has done in his whole career. Into the defence, you've got Alexander-Arnold and Van Dijk from Liverpool, who've hit some form and showed that at the turf at the weekend, even though Burnley did put in a good performance. Joined by Senesi at Bournemouth, whose results, unfortunately, have picked up over the last month or two. He's averaging 8 points a game at the moment. Into the midfield, some familiar names there. Son, the most informed player, other than Alexander-Arnold at the moment. Kudus, McNeil, Salah and Richarlison. So no surprises there, but a few watch-outs that three of those players won't be available from game week 21, as I'll mention later on in the update. And then up front, two surprise names, actually. Dominic Solanke firing a hat-trick in last week in Bournemouth's win at Forest. And talking of Forest, Chris Wood with another Premier League hat-trick. Following on from when he did it for us at Wolves a few years ago, scoring a surprise treble at Newcastle at the weekend. Nice for them to feel the force of Chris Wood after they stole him off us in that fateful season. Next up, I'm going to do a No Nay Never league table update. We are mid-game week, but I'm just going to tell you the names of the top three currently. Who are doing very well. So Jim Buchan is in third place with 1,119 points. Aaron Flanagan in second, 1,129 points, and leading the way with Red Twine. A good 18-point lead is Jake Edwards. Well done, Jake. Just going to crown our November Manager of the Month while I'm on that screen as well. And that is Warren Graham with 192 points, just pipping Andy Dewhurst into second place. Now, I mentioned earlier about the upcoming issues that we may see. There is the African Cup of Nations and the Asia Cup, both starting in game week 21. So maybe not completely imminent. But since we're in the middle of game week 19 at the moment, and you might be listening to this in the build-up to game week 20, but definitely something to bear in mind, especially if you've got Salah, Son, Kudus, Wang, are probably the main players, but just read up on who's going to be unavailable. And the biggest thing is not to bring them into your team in the next couple of weeks. There's going to be a blank coming up as well for the Carabao Cup final. I think that's in game week 26, so just a bit further down the line. But semi-finalists, Liverpool are probably most likely to get to the final. So again, just a watch out there. And Chelsea as well, who made it through on penalties. Fulham probably lesser risk with your players coming up. But I think a few might have burnt Leno in goal. In terms of teams to target in the next few weeks with the African Cup of Nations coming up, a good thing about not having Salah or Son available is the fact that you should have enough money to spread around however you want. Haaland's not quite back to full fitness yet. It looks like he's not going to be back until at least game week 21. So that would have been the simple move to bring him back in. But really, we've got to wait for that update. So you'll have a free pick of all players. Really, it's going to be an interesting month. You normally see the teams filled with the normal big hitters, but any of the mid range players from City, Arsenal, Chelsea, Spurs, and Villa, it's probably the best place to go with when spreading the funds, as they have good fixtures as well as obviously being some of the best teams in the league. Another note that after 19 games, you don't get a suspension for 5 yellow cards. So that will mean waiting the build up to game week 20 when this comes out, the majority of sides will be beyond that threshold. The only ones to watch out are the players that play for teams who've only played 18 games, which is Man City, Brentford, Luton and Bournemouth. So just be careful if you're going to bring any of their players in. if they're on that dreaded four yellow cards, as that's hit a few people quite hard in the last few weeks, including myself. The game week, I've just got to mention as well, the No Nay Never League. So currently top of our podcasters league is last year's runner-up in the main league, Ursay. 10 points clear of me with 1,033 points. But the big shock in the head-to-head league, Natalie Bromley still leads the way and has managed to do the double over me this season. So your next expert update might be coming from Natalie and not me. And then it will be doing if this carries on. So well done, Natalie. Glad you're having a good season. I think you're giving me enough grief for it. Last thing today is the Game Week 20 deadline is on Saturday the 30th of December. Wishing you all a happy new year. And as always, wishing you all green arrows. Up the Clarets.
Thanks, Adam. Now, of course, just a reminder that the second half of the season, the FPL kicks off with Game Week 20 this weekend. There's no match on Friday evening in this set of fixtures, but there is one early kickoff on Saturday as Luton host Chelsea. That's the Saturday lunchtime kickoff, which means the FPL deadline will be 11 a.m. on Saturday morning. Although the two final matches aren't played until 2024, which is Monday and Tuesday, this round of 10 matches will be the final matches that count towards December's totals. So good luck and green arrows to you all. That is all we've got time for in this preview show. I hope you've enjoyed it and I hope you're going to stick around for 2024. We've got a little bit of tweaks to the fixture and our recording schedule and some new features for you next season. Hopefully a new streaming platform, which will be more accessible for those of you who want to watch visually, including live broadcasts. If you want to sit along and ask questions there and then, we would love to have you involved. So keep an eye out on social media. We'll be posting our revised schedule in the new year. Best wishes to everybody travelling to Villa. Do hope you come back with something and you're rewarded with some points. Other than that, we will see you in 2024. So best wishes for Happy New Year from everybody at Team Known and Ever to you and your families. If you've got any comments, questions, feedbacks, you know how to get in touch with us. But otherwise, we'll see you next time. I've been Natalie Bromley. This has been the preview show brought to you by the Known and Ever podcast. Until next time. The Known and Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Our host and editor is Natalie Bromley and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Rich Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby and Adam Dennett. Our music is provided by George Gaskell and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonenever.substack.com. Thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are proud to be associated with the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.